Accession number 16504 Reel 3.
Mr. Lane, Reel 3.
You asked me how I felt at being interned. Well, we were very bitter, because if anybody was to fight Hitler, it was us, rather than the Canadians or the British. And we sat there helplessly eating good food, whilst back in England they had very little to eat. And we were treated like prisoners of war. We had guard towers around the camp, where every 2 minutes at night they shouted at each other, "Number one, all is well. Number two, all is well." It went all night. We were guarded with machine guns as if we were dangerous people. And we had fought Hitler long before anybody in this country had fought Hitler. But of course, they were not sure whether one or the other of us might have been a spy. Mind you, we felt they should have looked at the Cambridge boys. They would have had more spies there than amongst us. That's it.
How long were you interned in Canada for?
Oh, I should say 1 year and 3 or 4 months. I came back in February 42.
So all the time at Quebec and Sherbrooke?
Yes. From Sherbrooke we were sent back to Halifax, and from Halifax on a steamer back to England.
Were there people with you whom you felt ought to have been interned?
No. 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 There were some communists, but of course they were fighting on our side in Russia at the time.
And what was your Atlantic crossing in February 42 like?
It was very fast. We had a Canadian general on board, so we were well protected. It was a fast crossing. We didn't meet any U-boats or anything. And from when we arrived from Liverpool, we were transferred back to the Isle of Man, where we stayed another 2 weeks or so until our papers were cleared and we were sent home.
What did you then do?
I married. I had known my wife for 7 years and we never had the chance to marry. So I married on a Thursday, 3 or 4 days after I got home, and the next day I joined the army. I had been released because I joined the army. And it was Pioneer Corps, 220 Company, Pioneer Corps. I was sent for training up to Highton Camp in Liverpool. And I remember that the first day in uniform there, a lance corporal, a little English lance corporal, came to us and said, you and you, come with me. And we had, but let me have your army documents. And I said, I'm sorry, you can't have my army documents. He said, he shouted at me, and in the end, I was put on a charge. Just imagine, first day in the army, and I'm put on a charge. And I went to the officer, in front of an officer, and I was told, why didn't I obey that lance corporal's advice? Because he asked for the documents, because we had to scrub the Nafi canteen, and the boys would run away, and he would have no control. There were thousands, he didn't know who we were, and they disappeared without doing the job, and by having our papers, he had a hold on us. So I was asked by, I said, well, if you read the small print in the soldier's logbook, or sold book, I think it was called, it says, under no circumstances will a soldier part with this book. And so that the officer smiled and said, that soldier is right. You have got to think up some new idea to control your men. And I was dismissed. That was my beginning in the army. I expect no other soldier had ever read the small print.
How did you get on in the Pioneer Corps?
Well, it was very heary work. We were in Cirencester cutting down trees in the Bathurst Estate, huge beech trees, which were used for shipbuilding and other purposes. We were attached to a New Zealand company who were masters in this craft. But we learned, and we had to be out in the woods by 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning during the winter, which was very hard work. And for months on end, I had to carry the new railway sleepers. You just don't know how heavy they are. Green, not dried yet, as they are cut out of a living tree, and load them onto a lorry. It brought my back. To this day, I'm suffering from back pains. You just can't realize what it means as an untrained person to lift these heavy things, two men, one on each end, up to a lorry. After a while, however, I was put on the sewing machines in the sewing works. And that was all right. Although once I had to interrupt for a minute or two to go to the toilet, and a colleague of mine took my job and I said, better don't do it, you don't know how to do it. And when I came back, he had cut 4 of his fingers off, and he was a violinist of all people, a brilliant violinist. He had 4 of his fingers cut off. But once we got a communique from the war office that any soldier who can report anything useful to the war office, which can help in the conduct of the war, should do so. And the officers in the camp had no power to stop you. They had to forward it on to the war office. So I thought, what the hell can I invent or can I write to get me out of this into something more congenial. And I wrote a report of what happened. I worked in a printing house in Vienna, and as soon as the Germans came, within days, they submitted documents which I had to fill in, which obviously were designed to find out what capacity the factory had, how they could be used in wartime, what machines we would require to have a better output, etc. And I remembered where these documents had to be sent to. In other words, there was a central office for statistics where these things were dealt with. So I wrote to the war office that in case we occupy Germany, we should take care not to destroy this statistical center, because once we are there, can lay hands on this information there, we can rule Germany, because we would know of every factory, we would know everything that was going on industrial all over Germany. Well, my officer said, do you think you know something we don't know? He was belittling my information. But a few months later, I was cutting down a tree when a motorcyclist from head office arrived and said, Lane, come to the head office. You are wanted by the war office. War office, me? Private Lane? War office in London? What have I done? And however, I got my ration and I got my tickets and I went to the war office and I was interviewed for about 2 hours by 2 high-ranking officers. And I was placed into HQ 21st Army Group Statistics. We were in Hammersmith, and as I found out, it was the headquarters of Montgomery, and we were preparing the invasion of Germany. We had to do work like one of my first tasks was the evaluation of the new Churchill tanks. We got reports on all Churchill tanks in the in the various army units. They were used to destruction, and we got reports of what was wrong with them, so that this was statistically collected and sent to the War Office. And I remember that the first report, my colonel asked me, "Are you happy with the report?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "I have no chance to check it. You have worked 2 weeks on it." And it went from my hands directly to the War Office, private lane to the War Office. And we did work on the vehicles in the British Army, on the equipment in the British Army. We had to work out the shipping room required on D-Day, D plus one, D plus two. Of course, we had to know exactly the equipment, down to the last rifle of the soldiers' equipment, what it weighs, and we had to calculate the shipping room required for each day, for each unit, so we knew the order of battle, which is the greatest secret there is in an army. And we knew who was going first and what equipment they would have. And really, it filled me with... I was that scared even to talk in my sleep. My wife, I had found a little flat near Kensington, and I really went home to sleep. It was only 10 minutes walk from where we worked. But she didn't know where I was going, what I was doing. She never asked, but I never let on at all. And we went across on, I think it was D plus 17 on the 17th day, in two huge lorries with computers. We had two cars for each vehicle in the British Army. There were about 1 million vehicles in the British Army. And we had to know in which unit had what vehicles, where they were. If a vehicle went into workshop for repair, we had to know. We had to know every tank where it was. And we were reported all losses, and the losses were reported back to the War Office, so that we got the right reinforcements. They didn't send us tanks when we needed tank carriers, for instance. It was an extremely important work and most interesting work of my whole life, I should say.
Where were you located when you were doing this planning work?
Well, at first in Hammersmith, before D-Day. Shortly before Hammersmith, we went down, halfway down to the coast, on a golf course in, oh, I forget now, I could look it up. That was the golf course of the former, of the king which had abdicated.
Edward VIII.
That's right. It was his private golf that where we were stationed. And from there, we went down to the south coast, and were shipped across like soldiers with huge equipment, millions of cards. But you must realize they were Holorith cards. You must realize what today can be worked out by the computers in milliseconds took us hours. Then we had to find the position of certain tanks. We had to have many cards through the machine and before we could identify the answer the question asked. We were then in tents on the beachhead. They were still fighting all around us. And then when Brussels was liberated, they were still fighting on one side of Brussels. I was the first man into Brussels for my unit. I had to find a suitable home for our machines, etc. And I found a beautiful house in Avenue Louis, which used to be occupied by SS troops, SS officers. And it was next to the former Gestapo headquarters. And I used, when I got there, I had to spend the first night on my own in that building. And I remember I ate that soldier's supper, which was already prepared on the table. He left in a hurry. And I wore his silk pyjama that night. And then by that time, my unit consisted of about 300 people, mostly former bank managers or people used with figures, used in figure work. My sergeant major in charge of my particular unit later became the highest ranking manager in National Westminster Bank, chief director, whatever, National Westminster. So it was all very interesting people I met there.
And what was the name or number of this unit?
21st Army Group, statistical unit, STATS. It'd be called as the abbreviated STATS. 21st Army Group in bracket STATS.
And who was in command of the unit?
A colonel who later, I forget his name, was a partner in a firm of chartered accountants.
And in the planning work, what were the main problems that you personally had to overcome in doing the work?
My main problem were the officers. The officers, in my opinion, didn't have the technical background that we had. They didn't quite understand what we were doing. They were posted to us by the War Office. We had to take them. My particular officer was collecting stamps all the time. And I was called one day to the colonel and said, we can't send his reports. He was supposed to utilize the figures I gave him and make a report to the War Office. And my officer told me that his reports were completely unreliable and stupid. And he has given instruction to the postal department, when the officer had given him, to open it and pass it on to me for correction and reading. So I wrote the officers, I utilized my figures for a report to the War Office. The officer never knew.
Why didn't they just remove him?
They were protected by high ranking. You know, they were all sent to us by. They all had protection by somebody or else. They were all related to somebody or else.
But you had no
problem. Not all of them, but my particular officer, anyway.
But you had no problems in being able to get hold of the necessary information with which you had to do the job?
No.
Do you remember a term, bigoting?
A term what?
A term at the time called bigoting.
No.
Concerned with being bigoted or being put on a list of people who had access to classified information.
No, I didn't feel observed. I didn't feel that anybody mistrusted me whatsoever. I must say, I'm sure I was observed. When we got into Germany, I always kept away from Germans. For that reason, I never was one who went to Germans and get himself a Leica camera or anything. I got nothing. I collected some books which happened to be in the house where I was stationed, but I kept away from all this because I thought they watched me and they would have been entitled to watch me. So I was completely isolated. I isolated myself. I didn't want any contact with Germans.
Any memories from the occupation of Germany that we can record?
Well, we were first from Brussels, we went to Herford in Germany, where we occupied large former troops. I remember when we got there, an officer asked me, Fred, you can, we were all on first name terms with the officers and everybody. It just shows you the mood. We were not like an army unit. We could wear what we wanted. Nobody bothered us whether we had private shoes or whatever. Even Montgomery, when he came, we met him. You know, he didn't care tuppence the way we were dressed. I was told there's a letter in somebody wants the caretaker who remained, who was the caretaker under the Germans, wants to give us a letter. Can you read it? And I read that letter. It was the last letter an Austrian soldier had written before he was executed by the Germans a few days before the end of the war. And he begged that the letter be sent to his relatives in Austria. And I sort of censored it and said it's all right to try and send it on. The poor man, he was shot by the Germans.
What had he been shot for?
That I don't know. Probably began to realize a bit late what went on.
And this was in Erfurt?
Erfurt, H-E-R, Erfurt.
H-E-R-F-O-R-D. It's a place in Germany?
Yes. I think that's the spelling. It's a long time. And from there we went to a place called Bad Oeynhausen, the whole HQ 21st Army Group. And there Montgomery said goodbye to us. He was released before us. I was Group 36. My last job in the army was an interesting one. I was told that we want to find out what vehicles the Germans had left so that we could plan for them the spare parts, to produce spare parts which could repair existing vehicles. And every town mayor would give us a report, and I had to make one big consolidated return on it. And as these people reported in German, they needed a German-speaking man in charge. So they told me I would get 32 ATS girls to help me doing it. The report on a million vehicles each month. To take, it's not only one piece of information, it had to be the make of the car, the tonnage of the lorries, whether the car was repairable or was it only good for cannibalism. So you had every report went under four or five headings. That's 4 or 5 million entries. How can you do that? I said, now this is the first job which can be done on our computers. They had mistrust, began to mistrust the computers. They were not very happy with them. I said, I can't do it otherwise. It's impossible for me. And I don't want 32 ATS girls. I want that school opposite was a German German girls' high school. I want those girls, because they are German reports they had to read. I want them to translate it into the punch cards. So they said, you won't have any... You will have only one assistant, that was that Scottish assistant I told you about, who was envious that I became a staff sergeant. And otherwise you won't have any English staff. I said, no. I said, what a pity. We intended to make you a lieutenant, but he must have at least 32 ATS girls under him. Otherwise you don't qualify. I said, what do I care? I'm released in a few months' time. What do I care? Do you want the job done efficiently? These ATS girls can't read German. They would come to me with all these queries. And so it was done. I got two classes of these high school girls, and they did a very good job. They did the right reporting, and I still got one of these reports here if you want to see it later. And then the last few months, 2 months I think, they said it might be useful for me if I went to German university, which we had occupied in Göttingen, to to learn English, and study English, so that I'm better prepared for civilian life, which was very decent of them. So I went and had courses run by a fellow called Mendelssohn. I think he's the son of the present Labour MP Mendelssohn. I think he's the son of that man who taught there. I think so. And then I came home.
What did you and your comrades think of Montgomery?
Well, at the time, we were a little not disappointed, but whenever he spoke, he said, "I did this." He never gave credit to us. We might have spent 2 weeks, day and night work, to give him some figures. And I said, I did these figures. He never gave us credit for anything. When we challenged him, he said, and then we understood it, he said, "Look, Great Britain looks at somebody to give them hope in these terrible times. And I am the somebody to give them hope. It's no good to say Lane and what's name did the job. They don't know you. They know me. So everything is concentrated. I've done it all, so to speak. I know it's not been me. I know it's been my man in the HQ." So I think that made sense to us. But one likes to be credited if one does a lot of work.
But you found his explanation acceptable?
Yes, yes, really.
What's the story of how you changed your name?
Oh, we just were told from one moment to another that was back in England still, that it would be advisable for us to change names, because if the Germans would capture us, we would end on the first tree. Hang on the first tree. They didn't offer us citizenship like the American refugees. The moment they entered the army, they were given American citizenship. We had to apply in the ordinary way, like anybody else after the war, for citizenship.
Was it easy to get citizenship?
It was, perhaps, can I say, automatic. Probably it took 6 months or so after I got home.
Did you ever consider going back to Austria?
Never. Never.
Why not?
On holidays, yes. Too many memories of what happened, not only to me, but to dozens of my friends and relatives. Almost all my relatives ended up in Auschwitz. If I met an elderly person in the streets of Vienna, I wondered, what did you do during the war? No, I could never have got back.